Welcome to Talking Cybersecurity, a weekly podcast listened to in over 50 countries. My name is Richard Herron and I am your presenter. In the Talking Cybersecurity podcast, expect to hear all things related to the cybersecurity industry, whether that's getting your first job, interviews, board reports, data breaches, different approaches to cybersecurity, or conferences. None of the opinions expressed on this podcast by myself or guests are necessarily reflective of the opinions of the organisations we represent. If you want to continue the conversation, feel free to join the LinkedIn group, Talking Cybersecurity. I use Pixabay for most of the music heard on this podcast. Ni hao, and a big warm welcome to episode 67 in Talking Cybersecurity this week. We'll continue part two of our three-part series on the oddly named credential stuffing with Ollie Stimpson from CyberArk. How's April treating you? I don't know about you, but I've been ultra busy this week at work, answering internal queries, external queries. I was thinking about last week's episode, so I created a draft disclosed credentials playbook this week, which I was pretty happy about. Perhaps playbooks, or at least creating a playbook template, could be an episode in the future. What else? Hasn't been a lot on the data breach side lately. Well, not in Australia anyway, although I saw a Brisbane, Queensland-based banking corporation had a bit of a hit this week. I hope they've got enough resources to get them back to BAU as soon as they can. I've spoken to 101 people on the phone this week. Slight exaggeration there. Recruiters, people looking for jobs, people I used to work with, etc. And I mentioned earlier this year that this year could be the year of change for many people. And I've got to say, quite a few people I know who are CISOs have either been let go, resigned, or just restless. And they're looking for something new. Maybe they've got the post-COVID blues, who knows. This week really has been pretty full on, as they used to say back in the day. Anyway, on to part two, where I ask Ollie a few questions about protective measures when it comes to the oddly named title, credential stuffing. Okay, so I'm going to ask you a two-part question. It's the same question, but one's from an individual perspective and the other is based on an organisational perspective. So the question is, what steps can individuals take to protect themselves from credential stuffing? So I'm thinking using unique passwords or enabling 2FA, things like that. But you're the expert, Ollie. You tell us what individuals can do to protect themselves from credential stuffing.
Yeah, well, I'm the expert. I'll wear that crown for this one. But yeah, appreciate the pressure you've put on me there. So what can both an individual and an organization, what steps can be taken? It's a good question. So again, we have to think about the basics. A threat actor, a bad actor, a cyber criminal will compromise basics in cyber hygiene. That's the rule again and again. What steps can an individual take? Australian government has actually been quite prescriptive on this. If you look at what the Minister for Home Affairs, Clara O'Neill, has been saying, she's come out with some quite specific steps, and she's the expert in this case. So look at what she says, but just to summarize for everyone listening in today, using things like unique passwords and complex passwords at that makes life harder. If you're not using the same passwords across different services, it can't be credential stuffed. If you're not using basic passwords, it can't be password sprayed. So we need to get this idea that everyone needs unique, complex passwords across each of their services, or to move past passwords altogether and use passwordless technologies like passkeys, which is starting to be widely adopted across certainly, I think, significant accounts that most of us have, things like a Google or an Apple account. Passkeys are ready and available, and it moves past that password-based authentication for the consumer. Now, not everyone's there yet, so if you do still need a password, there's a couple of things you can do. You can use a password manager to store and manage that password for you. Again, that this is free and available through people like Google and many services like that. Use a password manager. You don't have to remember all these passwords. Get someone or something to remember them for you. get them to create them for you, and it takes that burden away. But always as well, make sure that multi-factor authentication is turned on if possible, and ideally make sure that's as strong as possible. So, hey, if there's an option to receive an SMS with a one-time password in it, use it. It's free. Make use of it. But if there's something else that's even better, like the ability to use a one-time password that's generated through an authentication app, use that, because that's even harder for someone to crack. And unfortunately, with the amount of money that is going into cyber criminal hands, they're taking the time to crack what they can. So make it harder for them. Don't be that weakest link in the chain.
Yeah, I've got to say, thank goodness for tools such as CyberArk and password managers, et cetera, because I've been doing security since 2002. And ever since then, all our policies have said you must have a unique password for every system you log into. Now at work, I probably log into 20 different systems. So I'm supposed to have a unique password to 20 different systems. And then you add in LinkedIn, Facebook and all that. And I probably log into 50 different systems. So I'm supposed to have a unique password for everyone. Then it's supposed to be at least, let's say, 12 characters with upper, lower numerics and special characters. The theory is good, but the practice is just different. You cannot not write them down. So what I personally do, I've got a book and I'll write the word LinkedIn, and next to it I'll just put first dog, and you won't know what that means, but my password to LinkedIn might be Goldie the Labrador was my first dog. You know what I mean? So you can kind of encrypt it yourself, but still it is very painful. So again, thank goodness for tools like, you know, CyberArk, password managers, pass keys, all that stuff. I want to ask you something about detection and response.
Yeah, please go ahead.
Beautiful. So a lot of us use what's called the NIST framework, which is identify, detect, protect, respond, recover, and now govern. As far as response is concerned, how can organizations detect and respond to credential stuffing attacks in a timely manner? Quite often you hear, oh, found out we had a breach 3 months after it happened. And I remember when I was going to my first security conferences 20 years ago, they were talking about it takes 18 months to detect a fraud or a breach. Now it's a bit quicker. That was a long way, Holly, of saying, how can organizations detect and respond to credential stuffing attacks in a timely manner?
So that's the key. When are we going to know that something has gone wrong in the enterprise space? We've talked about the individual, and for them, something's gone wrong when I notice something on my credit card statement. But if only it was that simple, if only you had that ledger as a business where you could review every activity that happened, and that's the point you spotted. So what can the corporate leader do? What can the cybersecurity leader do to detect and respond to these type of attacks? Well, that's something that CyberArk's been heavily involved in since the beginning. Our approach back then was to focus on what we called the privileged accounts inside an organization. Now, for those not familiar, it's a pretty widely used term these days, but effectively, privilege is shorthand for most risky. So think of those real crown jewel accounts that you wouldn't want a bad actor to be getting their hands on. Our response was to focus on those and build controls around those, because in an advanced cyber attack, it's almost guaranteed that a threat actor will be going after them. So build controls around those, and that makes it far easier to detect and respond to what is happening. And then certainly in terms of response, that if something has happened, they're the keys to the kingdom that you will be rebuilding the enterprise on. And that discussion around resilience through security of those accounts is something that is present even to this day. There have been some changes, right? I mentioned that was how we started. What's changed is the breadth of those accounts. So is it enough just to put something like your domain admin accounts in something like a password vault, securely store them and audit access to them and rotate them? Not anymore, right? Again, thinking about how your business has changed. You're not just in that data center. You're not just using things like Active Directory on premise anymore. You've moved into the cloud. You have developers who are running pipelines. You have applications that are running your organization that are using credentials as well. And it's not enough just to think about, say, human users and their use of these credentials. If we're looking at detection and response, we have to think about broader as well. Well, what kind of access is a user getting in the cloud? How could I detect and respond to something that happens maliciously in something like a cloud console or a CLI? What happens if a secret that is hard-coded somewhere is starting to be used outside of that place? What would that mean? Well, we need to ensure that we're actually looking more broadly across the business. But maybe to slightly turn the question back on its head, what we also need to remember is that prevention is better than cure. We can try and detect and respond to things, but it's best if we've prevented at all. Again, we talked about COVID. I think we all learned that vaccines were the way out of that because it prevented the spread rather than us then having to go to hospital and be treated. It's just the same with cyber. And we see a lot of discussion around technologies like ITDR, Identity Threat Detection and Response. It's a strong market trend within our space, but prevention is better than cure, and doing the right things, thinking about that hygiene, is essential because, again, we only have to be wrong once on our side of the fence. So yes, you're reliant on detection and response, but if that doesn't see something, well, that's a real challenge. And we saw that just recently that in the US, it was noted that a state actor had been operating within the infrastructures of US critical infrastructure entities for close to 5 years. Now, there's your argument in a nutshell about how prevention has to be balanced with detection and response, because if someone's using a credential, it's very difficult to say, well, that person should be doing that or shouldn't, because they just blend into that traffic. We don't have that credit card record of everything that's happened. So it's very easy for someone to blend in and live off the land. So yes, detection and response, we've covered some strategies there, but don't look at those against the basics and the hygiene of prevention as the first step.
Yeah, there's an old saying you hear at conferences all the time that goes something like, prevention eats detection for breakfast every time. However, a bit of detection doesn't hurt either, because if something bypasses the prevention or the protection capability,
it has to be balanced. You're right. Yeah. And we're advocates for both, because the risk of compromised identity is only going one way, unfortunately, and that needs to be balanced. The controls need to be on both sides of the house.
Now, you sort of mentioned that password vaults aren't necessarily the silver bullet, and especially with the movement into the cloud, things are interesting with identity. What role do password managers, password policies, and regular password resets play in addressing credential stuffing? All right, they're not the silver bullet, but would you consider them defense in depth?
They help. They have a role to play, absolutely. You know, we have a strong background of helping organizations secure the keys to the kingdom. That's a technology that we invented nearly 25 years ago now, and is still used by thousands of organizations worldwide, because even in a cloud native business that was born yesterday, there are going to be keys to the kingdom that need to be secured. They need to be locked away and accessed in the rarest of cases. Let's take something like an AWS root account. It's a credential. Yes, it's cloud native, but it's a credential that should be vaulted and secured. But outside of that, of course, there's other things. You know, we'll continue with the AWS example. Let's look at what happens if someone gains access to the admin console, to the console or the CLI of AWS, or insert your CSP of choice. Now, thinking about how someone might gain access today, and coming back to our point of credential stuffing, let's run through a scenario in our heads. So let's imagine that a service I use is compromised and that a threat actor is able to gain a hold of my password, and it just happens to be the same as my corporate identity. A very real problem, and one that a security leader would find very hard to have a view of, because they don't know what users are doing with their personal passwords outside of the corporate space. So off the back of that, someone now has access to my corporate identity, and through reconnaissance that we talked about already, they know that I'm a developer who posts things about AWS. So it's likely that I've got access to that console. Thanks to Federation, if you compromise that corporate identity, and if you're able to bypass my MFA, which we've seen is all too easy to do with some very public examples at places like MGN last year, we see that the challenge of how do I actually stop someone gaining very high admin access after that point. So my corporate identity gives someone access into the cloud console. at the moment, there's been no role for a vaulted credential because I have admin level access over everything that's running in that AWS account. I can turn off services. I can spin up new instances to start crypto mining. It's very difficult for anyone to know what happens post fact. So yes, there's a role for password managers and credential managers, but again, remember that passwords are a fairly weak form of authentication. They are literally everywhere in many of the enterprises we speak with, but think about how your business has changed, how your organization has changed, and the tech landscape has changed in your organization, because that will give you a viewpoint on how far something like password management will get you and how far you have to look like at other technology approaches, like securing access to cloud management consoles and CLIs, or even securing non-human access as well, which is going to go hand in hand as your organization starts to digitize.
It's interesting. You just triggered a memory of mine. I was listening on the radio a few months ago, and I was listening to a friend of the podcast, Nigel Fair, who's a professor at Monash University, and he was talking about quantum computing. And I think what he was saying is that all these passwords that have been downloaded, that they're all in hash form, whatever, they can't be cracked yet. But when quantum computing really takes its next big leap, those passwords stored in those lovely hashes are going to be cracked sooner rather than later. And I think that's going to have a big impact on credential stuffing, because they've got the passwords there, they're in hash form. But again, quantum computing will be able to crack them and get the password, do some credential stuffing, some password spraying. I think we could all be in a bit of trouble.
Don't want to paint too negative a picture before the internet, but it is a real challenge, right? That when quantum is able to decipher the encryption that's been used widespread for many years, well, we need to prepare for that day. And there's a lot of research going on at the moment about how we do that. And we even see that start to work its way into the technology stack as well, which is great to see. What I'd add is that, again, while we can focus on that next generation threat, that significant challenge that will come up, we need to be aware that it's still the basics that cause problems. Like, hey, maybe quantum computing will decrypt a password that's been hashed and vaulted in the future. But again, if a threat actor can compromise a user's identity because they borrowed it from another service, or even worse, right? A common example that we hear now is a user has authenticated, but there's a session cookie available that a threat actor is able to use and actually carry out an attack post-authentication. So, hey, the user did all the right stuff, but that session cookie acts in place of that authentication, and a threat actor is able to use that and log in their own right elsewhere. Hey, well, I don't need to wait around for quantum to come along and crack all my passwords, because I've got something that happens already day to day that is something that can be difficult to recognize. Hey, it's different. We've had all this discussion around passwords, but steps can be taken today to start to reduce that risk.
Yeah. Look, I don't want to go doom and gloom, and I don't want to lose hope. So I've got to ask the question, are there emerging technologies or solutions that show promise in combating credential stuffing, especially now and in the future? And I've got a feeling CyberArk might come up in your discussion. But yeah, what are those emerging technologies or solutions that can help combat credential stuffing?
Hey, well, I'll not bite on that too readily. I'll try and talk general before I talk about us. But I think a couple of areas that can be addressed immediately here is use of passkeys. So passkeys is that potential to be a broadly adopted passwordless authentication factor for, well, anyone, right? These services are already widely available across many of the accounts that we interact with day in, day out in our personal lives. Another really interesting area within Australia, and again, this is something that it's worth touching on in its own right in a separate session, is the Digital Identity Bill that's making its way through the Australian Parliament. This idea that we will have a single digital identity that can cover not only our interactions with public sector services, but also can be used by the private sector, is a really interesting one. And I mentioned right at the start, I hinted I'd come back to this, that I spent 2 years in Denmark, and there they have a widely adopted standard where you have a single digital identity. You use that for your interaction with government digital services, with your banking accounts, with your telco account, So that's something it's great to see in region that the Australian government is prioritising. It's making strong progress through Parliament. It was just passed through the Senate. But of course, then the challenge is implementation. We're not there yet. Just because something has gone through on paper, we then need to have the technology available, and we need all of us to be driving adoption through that as well. But Australia has a strong background of government digital identity with the MyGov platform. Over 10 million Australians already use that. So there is that precedence. Now, I said I'd speak general. I'd also talk a little bit about CyberArk as well. So, hey, we have a strong background in helping reduce their risk from attacks like credential stuffing and reduce their risk from attacks that leverage poor cyber hygiene, poor password practice. And we've also innovated here as well because we've had to try and keep up and recognize threat actor innovation. And I mentioned a specific example there, things like cookie-based session cookie compromise, session cookie theft. Now, all of this works because we're ultimately talking about a user accessing something on the web. And to access something on the web, you use a web browser, whether you're at home or whether you're at work. I don't know about you, Richard, but I spend the majority of my day in my web browser. Now, in my personal life, I have protections within that. I have accounts within that that manage my password. But outside of that, in the workspace, if I'm doing something risky, and I'll put my AWS hat on again, if I'm doing something risky in AWS, should I still be using that same grade of browser to access that console? Or if someone can potentially compromise a password, if there's an opportunity for me to save that password in my browser, if there's an opportunity for someone to pull a session cookie or even for me to copy sensitive information onto my clipboard, all of this presents a risk, and it's driven by the fact that that browser is consumer grade. So CyberArk very recently, just a couple of weeks ago, launched the first identity security browser, which...
That's it for episode 67. I hope you got something out of it. I'm off for a bike ride, and I hope you're doing something that you really enjoy. Until next week, have a great week, folks, and I'll speak to you then. See ya.